And so, this talk is not so much intended to educate you about the use of mathematics and physics. Rather, its aim is to establish a minimum base level of Mathematica, which you'll need for the succeeding days of the summer school. I'll focus on some of the points during my various talks that are very likely outside the scope of the range of the other talks. I'll be including topics on graphics, the graphic system, visualization, symbolic computation, numeric computation, maybe later on some parallel programming, GPU computations, machine learning, maybe some other goodies. But however, the main focus of this talk will be on the core language itself. And I'll be demonstrating how to actually drive the front end, how to interact with it, use the help system to find your way around, and some basic stuff to get us started on programming Mathematica. And I'll comment and I'll say Mathematica is a truly vast system. It's got 5,700 symbols or so at the current version right now. And since it is so big, it can be a bit daunting to you know, when you first start using it. But really, the core of Mathematica is reasonably small. It's quite tractable for you in the summer school to actually get familiar with the core of Mathematica and learn how to drive the system. Okay, so what is Mathematica? Mathematica is a system for doing symbolic and numeric computations and visualizing the results. It's basically, at its core, it's a functional language. It's based on rewrite rules and an infinite evaluation model. But one can program it in many different sort of paradigms. You can program it in an imperative, procedural sort of model, object-oriented model, maybe prototypical inheritance, and so on. Mathematica is quite adaptable at the higher levels, so you can make it, you can sort of give it model other languages and other sorts of paradigms at the higher level if you so choose. Mathematica itself is comprised of several million lines of code in C and C++, and indeed top-level Mathematica. I personally am responsible for around about 150,000 lines of C++, or maybe might even be about a couple hundred thousand lines now, and tens of thousands of lines of Mathematica code itself, and dare I say it, probably the odd bug. What is the, just to talk a brief history of Mathematica. So a brief history of Mathematica. In about 1960s, Lisp started at MIT with John McCarthy, and there's been a number of other systems since then. They sort of evolved, and systems maybe for algebra, maybe computation, for geometry, and so on. And there's a field of them that have evolved, but over time it's sort of settled down into some of the big players. And Mathematica is probably the biggest gorilla in the room. So it actually started in about 1980 with Wolfram SMP. There was various lessons learned there, and that went on to found later on Mathematica itself in 1988, so a good 27 years ago now. So it's evolved considerably since then. One of the seminal versions of Mathematica was version 6, and really still to this day, we dominate the field quite substantially, I would say, in that it's really the first system where you've got an actual a document which you can do the computations and visualizations in the same system that you're working with, and you'll be using this. And then later on, we've got every year every couple of years we bring out various versions which again add more and more functionality into Mathematica itself. And so we're on version 10 is now the latest version. Okay, so let's start and let's actually talk about the notebook interface itself. So we say this is a computable document format. We can do computations right in our actual notebook that we're working on. And so we can, you know, that's some text. We can do some simple plots, you know, x squared, x goes from 0 to 1. Some simple things, and so we've got graphics, we've got plots, and 3D graphics, and so on, all within the same sort of interface. And so these things on the left-hand side, right over the right-hand side over here, are cells. And I can select ranges of cells. I can copy them out by the cell brackets. I can select disjoint ranges, copy, paste. I can change the style of a particular cell here. So like that is right now is a text cell. I could change that to a title cell with that command equivalent, command 1, or command 2, so on. I could command 9 is the input cell, so I could evaluate it or change it back, of course, to any particular style that I'd like. We'll make that text. I can get cells. If you've given them a big range of cells, you can divide the cells here and under divide cell, like that, you can divide cells and you can merge them back together again, and so on. So I would comment as well for you, when you're structuring your calculations to start out, structure them in a nice way. So create your notebooks, and so of course I'll just use some example here, just some sort of silly example. I'll create a title here, My Plan to conquer the world. The world here, and so I'll start this off with maybe some subsection here, the startup phase, and then I'll put in a text cell here, I'll create it, and then I'll collect lots of evil followers. And so then I'll play the plan here will be equal to, I'll have some choices here maybe, will be like evil plan or good plan. And so I can do some computations there. I can, you know, create another sort of section here, implementation phase, and of course I'll think about this later, and then I'll have my sort of resolution phase here, resolution. Oh, we're in the domination, world domination phase, of course. So here and now we would revel in our world domination. And so we say money equals, you know, like 15 factorial, something big. Of course, Wolfram's not, well, anyway, we won't talk about money. But you can see here I've structured this notebook, and you should structure your notebook in certain ways as well. I can collapse these cells now. I can move them around, and I can have maybe a second implementation phase, and I can give this to various people around the world, and they can see our plans for world domination. And of course, this is just a joke. I know this is going to be going live, of course, so this is, don't take my comments as representing Wolfram or any legalistic things. I'm just giving you a cute example that you should structure your notebooks in this kind of way, not for world domination, but so that other people can follow them. They're broken up into sections, and you can follow what's going on. Okay, so that's a bit about the notebook interface itself. Let me then talk about standard form versus traditional form. And so one of the things leading into this is a brilliant decision Stephen did about square brackets versus round brackets. So if I have a function f, normally f is a function, and so I have a function of a plus b, and I evaluate that in Mathematica, we see it's not actually function application, it's multiplication. So that you might think that's a bit strange, that should be function application there, but if I write c here, well, c is a symbolic constant, that makes a bit more sense. So semantically, you know in your head, when you see f, it's a function, you see c, it's probably a constant, and so you're making some semantic decisions in your head, distinctions, but of course, in a computation system, we can't make that. So what we do in Mathematica, we have the default, the space operator, is actually multiplication. We don't need to actually put in here a star to actually distinguish multiplication. So here, when we want function application, we put brackets in. It's a really brilliant decision, and so if we have normal things like a random number or, you know, factorial, double square brackets? I think probably Stephen did, but it's a good one as well. Part, we'll talk about part in a second. So here's some factorials and so on. So that's how we have normal functions and function application. And of course, you might take a look at that output, the f square bracket a plus b, and you say, well, that doesn't really look like traditional mathematics. I want that to look like traditional mathematics. And so what you can do is you can get this particular input, and we can get this particular cell, select it, and we can go cell convert to traditional form. And so that's Command Shift T. I'll use that a bit, and to get back to standard form, it's Command Shift N. So in traditional form, it looks like now really traditional mathematics. And so, of course, that's function application. To get multiplication, we have a space. So we can get back and forth. So you think, well, I could actually, you know, that's fine. I could go back here between our standard form and our traditional form. I could just work with traditional form. And you mostly can. However, traditional form is ambiguous. So let's look at this. And so here we have this integral in standard form here, evaluates, you know, pretty simple stuff. And so we can convert that to traditional form again by cell convert to traditional form here. And we can see that in traditional form, works exactly the same. And so standard form, traditional form, and so on. So you think, well, let's work in traditional form all the time. So gamma of A, what's that in traditional form? That's, of course, just gamma of A. But let's take a look at this next input here. We have bel B, the nth bel B number. In a traditional form, typically around the world, that's b subscript n. And the same with the Bernoulli number, b, the nth Bernoulli number, and they look exactly the same. And in fact, if I type in the b subscript n here, we actually get a third form of input that looks exactly the same. And so the traditional form is actually ambiguous. Now, it turns out, we'll see this later on, that Mathematica knows the difference underneath. So if I copy that bel b number there and I paste it, I can actually get bel b. I copy that Bernoulli B, I actually get Bernoulli B, and it's because there's some sort of box structure, which we'll talk about later on. underneath. And so Mathematica knows the difference, but other people, when they look at this, they won't be able to tell the difference between these different Bs. Yes, we can. I added that in, I think it was version 8. It was version 7, so with template boxes, some of the stuff. Probably version 7. Yeah, anyway. You can put the mouse on top, but it is somewhat ambiguous. So traditionally, or standardly then, we work in standard form, but you can make it in traditional form or standard form as you so choose. Oh, and I should mention as well, if you want to change that, you can actually just go to the preferences here, evaluation, and actually change the default input form from standard form to traditional form, for instance, and you can pull up a new notebook here and start typing away, and it will be in traditional form, which, you know, italicizes various things and, you know, looks a bit more traditional. Okay. Right, but we'll change this mode back now to a standard form. Okay. So for entering stuff in Mathematica, in the end, once you get good at it, you can just sort of enter stuff in here, you know, A, you know, percent B here, e to the minus x squared dx, and I'm typing standing up instead of a table. So you can enter the stuff reasonably fast, and you say, well, that's great for me, but how do I do that? How do I enter this stuff in? So entry is quite fast once you actually know how, but you actually need to learn how. And so the way you'd probably start off here is you'd actually go to the classroom assistant. I've blown this up to 200%, and you can actually take a look. The first thing you do is take a look and find the template that you actually want. You could click on that, and you can tab between all of the various parts, and I could enter then here the part here. Well, I'll enter in the exponential there, minus x, and I'd enter in the power here, squared, and dx. But this gets old really quickly. I want to be able to actually type these things. So instead of doing that, I can actually take a look here at when I'm mousing over this. You might actually be able to read it at the back. I don't know. There's a short form right there. It says escape, D-I-N-T-T, escape. And so to get our short forms in Mathematica, we use this escape sequence. So I can type here escape, D-I-N-T-T, escape, and it'll turn out, it'll expand the template, and now I can fill that in as before, A, B, and so on. So I can enter it that way, but even shorter than that is I'd like to be able to enter just all the parts and just move around. So one of the things we actually take a look at as well is the special characters. So in here, we take a look at the various symbols, and we can actually see there's like an exponential E, an exponential, and an imaginary I. And in fact, in Mathematica, the I's, the exponential I's, the exponential E's are different than an actual E. There is an E symbol there. I'll put it at 300% so you can actually see. And there is an exponential E. And the same with, you know, the square root of minus 1 is actually imaginary I, which is different than I itself. So to enter the exponential E, it's escape EE, and so on. To enter the integral, I can type escape int escape to get the integral. And then I use the type setting system here to actually get from here to get a subscript, which is control minus. I type an A there. I use the type setting system here. Type setting, get the opposite position, control 5, B. I cursor out, I hit escape, E, escape. Power is again by this typesetting thing here by superscript, control 6, and so on. So just learn these particular things. There's only like about 6 of them, and it's pretty easy. And so from there, you can actually get and start typing in your math. So this is how you can enter in math. One of the things I'd mention apart from these symbols here that you can enter by this escape sequence is you can actually type control dot, and this will give you successively bigger, structurally complete parts of an expression. So I can copy that, I can go down and I can paste it, you know, and paste that again and change some bits in here and do some computations. Okay, so that's how you enter stuff. Move it around. Let's now actually talk about some of the helpers. So built into version 10 is this autocomplete features. In version 9, you had to hit sort of command K. But let's say I want to enter the Weierstrass here, the Weierstrass zeta function. I can just cursor down to it and hit tab, and it'll automatically complete it. I can actually as well, once I've completed it once, I can hit down arrow again and get a template, a context-sensitive help that I can actually fill in, Z, A, B, and enter that and probably put that in traditional form. So I can enter these things quite quickly. So it's very useful to actually use the autocomplete features, make sure you don't have spelling mistakes, and find out what's going on. One of the other features I'll use a lot during this talk is the insert input from above. And so I'll hit Command L, it just inserts that input from above, and I can change that to something like Q and do some other sorts of computations with it. Okay, so one of the next ones, so that's how we enter stuff, what Mathematica is, the notebook interface. So one of the next important things to actually know is how to get help. And so once you know the core of the system, there's lots and lots of commands, you need to be able to quickly get help on any one particular command. And so from here, you can find the selected function by Command Shift F, and it'll take you, for instance, to plot. And the plot command here, it'll give you various details, some examples. And so as you go through here and you see some particular plots and you plot legends, what's that? So you can just click on it and go find help on plot legends, and then maybe, oh, what's this list line plot, what's that, and go find some help on list line plot, and you know, just bury yourself in and around it, the various bits as you what's an axis label and so on. And so you just find help on the various bits as you need to. And so it's very important that you can actually find your way around quickly, find the functions you want, and then get on with what you actually want to do. Okay, and so you can actually, if you pull up the Documentation Center without any particular function, you can see the various sections here. It's sort of broken down kind of nicely. And the one you're probably interested the most to start out with is the core language and structure. You can take a look at the language overview here. And here's a list of the various functions which you'll come to grips with during the course of this summer school. Okay. So, and one other thing I wanted to point out, it's not actually built into the help system of Mathematica, but this fast introduction for programmers. If you know C++ or Java or possibly even JavaScript, if you call yourself a real programmer, you can actually take a look at this fast introduction for programmers, and it's quite good. It's quite quick, and it's quite, I really like it. So that's one thing that's quite good. So finally, I've talked about the context-sensitive help, pulling it up, but I'll even talk about the predictive interface. Now, for physicists like yourselves and like me, I often turn this off because it sort of gets in the way. So you might want to do that as well. It's show the suggestions bar after last output. However, it is actually useful in some cases. So now that I've got it on, we'll take a look at a particular thing like for a plot. And so for a plot, we'll do some plot of like, I don't know, sine of x squared. And so take that between x goes from 0 to 2 pi, for instance. So we get some plot, and what we can do is we can say, well, I'd like to actually put a title on that plot, so let's put some labels on there, and let's actually label the whole plot by, call it ringing, and call that, you know, time is on the x-axis, and amplitude is on the y-axis, and let's change the font to something, you know, really funky, just so you know that we've changed it, and so I'll change it to Zeffino, for instance. And here we go, here's our plot that we did. So we can style it, and so you can quickly discover some of these things with the predictive interface. That's an interesting question. So we've played with, you know, plot inspectors and some of the other things. We've thought about them at different times. So for now, we're sort of moving with this predictive interface, and it is one thing we've wanted to do, like grid inspectors and some of the other inspectors as well, to actually have it sort of attached directly to it. But it's right below, and so you can sort of see this interface. So it doesn't work out so badly if you're actually using the predictive interface. But I'll just go and turn that off, because most of the time, you might not need to know that. Okay, so that's how the help system. So it's very important. We've covered the notebooks, how to enter stuff, how to get help on things. Let's actually do something now. So let's actually use Mathematica like a calculator. So for the start, this is like the Wolfram Alpha sorts of computations. Here's a, you know, somewhat complicated thing with sum over states, black body radiation, and we can do these kinds of integrals, and this gives us here the black body radiation is proportional to t to the fourth. So let's start entering some calculations in here. Let's do some simple let's do a quadratic here, ax squared plus bx plus c equals equals. And so I use that instead of a single equals. This is an equation that's an equality, not an assignment. So we use for testing comparisons or triple equals. And so here we get the standard sort of solutions for, you know, minus b plus or minus the discriminant all over 2a. So that we get nice solutions for the quadratic. And so for the cubic, it's a bit more complicated. We can still get closed form solutions. For the quartic here, we get even more complicated sort of solutions, but they're still closed form. And of course, if we take it a little bit higher, take it up to the fifth power here, Galois theory tells us we, in general, sometimes don't have closed-form solutions for these kinds of polynomials, and so we have these algebraic root objects, which represent the solutions. Okay, So let's. Let's talk about that later. So I really like that feature. That's a great feature. Why would you want to disable that? Let's chat. So if we get that input from above, we want to try, instead of solving, we might want to actually do some reduce this thing and get something a bit simpler here, some quantifier elimination sort of stuff, and say, when is that actually greater than zero? And already, just with that simple quadratic, it's pretty complicated. So let's get something so we can read it as humans and actually get down very simple sort of reduction here. So this is, when is this true? When is x squared plus x plus c greater than zero? Well, it's true when c is greater than a quarter here, and it's also true when c is less than a quarter, if x is less than that or greater than that. So we can do these kinds of calculations. We can solve, you know, differential equations here. Just to desolve, we'll take a look at some, you know, simple harmonic oscillator sort of stuff. Y of x equals, let's drive it, I guess. Give it a driving term here, and we're going to solve for the dependent function, independent variable, and so we have some, here we have the simple harmonic motion, some constants of integration here, and this driving term here. And we could get rid of some of these constants of integration here by just adding some further boundary value. And so let's add in a boundary value here, y dashed of 0 equals 1, for instance. And so here we've eliminated one of the conditions, and we'll go all the way, eliminate the other one as well. Y double dashed of 0 equals 0. How about that? There we go. And so here we've got some driving term and some simple harmonic motion here. Okay, so we can use it as a calculator like that. We can do things towards now more algebra, you know, x plus y, take that to the 10th power, and turn around and expand that. If we do, expand it. And we get some expansion there. We could turn around and actually simplify the previous result if we wanted to. And to refer to the previous result, we can use percent. So this percent right here refers to the previous result. If I type percent there, we see the previous result. And simplify the previous result, we get back to x plus y to the 10th. And in fact, instead of just the previous result, we can actually get any particular result here that we've still got in our history. So out 34 there is We can get that by just evaluating that, and we could get that value, and we could maybe do some substitution. K goes to, let's say, alpha, for instance, and do something with. Indeed. So this is, yeah. So as Collier says, So actually using these percent outputs, it's for the quick sort of calculations. You're experimenting, you're playing with it. Other than that, once you want to rerun your notebook or give it to somebody else, you usually put in defined variables, answer equals or radiation coefficient equals or something else. So one of the other concepts I wanted to actually point out in general in Mathematica, we try to actually have the output be just as good as input. It's not some sort of printed LaTeX form. You can't interact with it or something. You can, you know, select some bits of here, the output, you know, delete that bit of the output, and it's input. And so most of the time, there's, you know, interpolating functions or some of the other solutions we'll have that the output isn't sort of tractable. But most of the time, we endeavor and we try to have the output work as input. Okay, so now we can actually move on to talking about the core language itself and how to bend it to our will. So would like to now, I'd like to describe the difference between set and set delayed. So if I say x equals 5, for instance, and we take a look at x, it's indeed 5, and we take a look at x again, it's 5. And in fact, let's actually change that to a random number here. Random. And so we can see it maintains its same value over time. So if we actually take a look at the value of x, we see it's actually defined to be this value. It's set in, it's sort of frozen. If I had instead turned around and actually put in y colon equals the random here to get a random number, and I take a look at the values of y, sorry. I take a look at the values of what? What? I gave this talk many times. I don't know what the. Oh, that's ridiculous. That's just utterly ridiculous. It's interfacing with the perimeter systems. I'm sure there's some. Right, okay. So here, it's especially spiked. So y colon equals random. of that. So here we have some y is random here, and I've lost my scale. There we go. Y is random, and so if I take a look at a value of y, it gives me one value, and I take a look at it again, it's actually giving me a different value. Each time, it's giving me different values. And so if I actually take a look at a table, for instance, of these particular values, table of y, and take a look at 10 values of that, we'll actually see it changes every single time. But if I did the same thing with x, I see it doesn't change at all. And so really here, the difference here with this colon equals is it delays the evaluation. So that random is evaluated, the right-hand side is evaluated each and every time. And so you'll often do this when you actually want computations on the right-hand side to occur repeatedly. Okay, so one thing I'd like to actually talk about is function application as well. So if we have, and often you'll do something, you'll do something else to it, you'll simplify it, expand it, factor it, pull some cases out and select something. You'll do all these repeated sort of operations. And so you'll often get some sort of bracketitis sort of thing like this. And it turns out in most modern functional languages, they actually have space is actually function application. So they'd be able to actually write something like this. They'll talk about currying and stuff in functional languages. But for us, of course, the multiplication is very dominant in Mathematica because people use it as an actual sort of to do computations. So we can't really use space, even though it would be kind of handy internally to actually do that for some of our internal code. Instead, we can actually use a form that's equivalent here by putting an ampersand. And so this form here of the input is exactly equivalent to that form there. And it nicely allows you not to have some of these brackets around stuff. And so that's quite nice as a equivalent input form. And one other equivalent input form we have in Mathematica is this trailing function application. So this slash slash some particular function. So you read that in Mathematica as like we've got some argument x plus y to the 10th, and we're going to do something to it afterwards. We're going to expand it. And then we've still got some values for x and y. I could clear those, x equals dot, y equals dot. Or sometimes I'll just, as I'm going through quite quickly, I'll just quit the kernel completely and just wipes everything out in the session to do it again. So here we've expanded some stuff. I could now actually I'll do some other post-operation. I'll factor it, for instance. And so you can chain these operations. And so you read this as basically, this is the important bit. And oh, by the way, do this and then do that. But I would say that's completely equivalent. If I get that input there, it's completely equivalent to that form there, factor of expand of x plus y to the 10. Cool. Okay, so in Mathematica now, we can actually start talking about programs and expressions. Inside Mathematica, everything is an expression. So everything is the actual form of head of argument 1, argument 2, and so on. And in fact, lists are also very common here. We have some list here like that, and you say, well, that doesn't look like, what's the head of this thing? Why is there a listy sort of thing around it? That's syntactic sugar in the sense that if we actually go take a look at the full form of this particular expression, again via our trailing function application, we see its form is actually list. So this is the sort of standard form version of it, but internally its head is actually list. And there's the arguments. A, B, C, D are our various arguments. You say, well, okay, that's true for that, but what about this? I mean, we've got powers and multiplication and so on. Surely that's not, this expression here isn't of this particular form. And I'll say, oh, but it is. And so if we take a look at this particular expression here, we can actually see it's got a head of plus, it's got these arguments A, it's got the D squared, which is power D to the 2, it's got the F, it's got the times B comma C. And in fact, we can see that a little bit clearer if we go down here and we actually get that and go to tree form like this. And so you can actually see that expression. Here we've got the plus of the whole thing, we've got the times, the BC, the power, D squared, and F. And I think I've quit my kernel since then, so I'll just go grab this particular expression just to show you something else. Get this, and we see that's percent 7. So we'll go back here to this, and we'll see percent 7. Here's our particular output, and we could get that and take a look at that in tree form. And so since this is, computable, it's a document, we can, blow it up and take a look at the graph here. And here, we can actually see for these things on the bottom, you take a look, you think, well, that's got a numerator and a denominator. We should be looking at some, it shouldn't be times here, it should be some sort of fraction-y thing. But it turns out this power c cubed here is actually, it's a power c to the minus 3. The h cubed here is power, h to the minus 3, and it's got this fraction in front. So it's represented internally as this times power of various things. Okay. So let's now talk about picking expressions apart. So the whole job in symbolic computation is to be able to get expressions, take bits out of them, transform them to other bits, and output them. And in fact, that's every algorithm that's ever been written. And so in symbolic computation here, we need to be able to pick apart these things that aren't just numbers, but symbols, and actually sort of work with them. So the first thing we do is we want to be able to actually take a part of this particular expression. Let's say we want the first part, that we want the A. And that'll actually turn around and return the A. I could take, you know, 2 to get the B. I could get the very last element, minus 1, counting from the end to get that. And since part is just so common and we use it so much, it's actually got a short form. And so I could get this particular output, and it looks like that. And so I've got these double brackets here. You can actually type them just by putting in repeated, you know, open, open, close, close. But you can get to that by hitting escape around them. Escape gives us the sort of nice form. It's a bit more readable. And so here we can use part, and we can take things. We can actually do ranges of things. We can take from like the first element through to the third element here. And so, of course, we've taken the first element's A, second element's B, third element C. And so we can take ranges. We could take from, you know, like the second last element to the end, and so on. And we can take various bits. So importantly, a lot of functions, just like part, actually has a lot of generalizations. We zip off to the help with part, and we can actually see there's not just the standard usage, but there's lots of different modes of actually using part. And that's true of many functions in Mathematica. You've got this generalization. And in fact, there's many different functions. I'll just concentrate on one that's similar to part to talk about some of the actual generalizations. So let's get some space there, and let's get that particular thing. And let's say we want to, let's generalize that a little bit and put an alpha in here, or gamma, just for something different. Okay, so we've got that. Let's say we want to actually get that y plus gamma term. So normally I'd get this, and I'd turn around, and I'd take the part, which would give me the b of x plus the b of x comma y plus gamma, and from there I could take and get the second part of that to get the y plus gamma, and from there if I wanted to get the y, I could go and I could take the first part there. Well, Mathematica's also got a short form here for the parts. By taking repeated things, it's equivalent to say that. 2, 2, 1 gives me the second part of the second and the first part of that. So, but what happens if I want to get a range of these things? I'd like to get the y, and I'd also like to get the c out of there. Well, in here, we can now move to extract. And so we get here, and extract works on a list of things. So the first list of items will be that. The 2, 2, 1 item is the y. We could turn around and extract the c by that being the third argument there, and so on. So an extract also has, in the help system, if you take a look at it, it's got sort of extensive generalizations as well. Okay, so that's how to pick things apart. The next function that will be very useful for you, and you'll use a lot, will be map. And so we can map something on. We can map like foo onto a list of A, B, C, D, for instance. And so this just maps this function onto every argument in the list. And of course, it doesn't just have to be a list. It could be any. As you know, a list is just a special case of having the head list. It could be any sort of expression. And of course, it's so common that it actually has its own short form as well. So this slash at is the same as map. So we can map there. It's exactly the same. And so I'll just move back to a list. It's sort of common. Lists are a very common structure. Okay, so that's map, and it also has generalizations. We can apply it at different levels, and so on. So let's actually talk about apply. Apply is sort of similar to map. It's a structuring, it restructures the expressions, and what it does is it'll take the head, in this case f, and it'll rip it off and replace it with the thing we're applying. So this applying bar to f of g just replaces the head f with bar. And of course, this is also so common that it actually has its own short form as well, at. So bar at f of g will replace the head f with g. And actually, it works at different levels, of course. So let's just take a look at one of those examples here. We see answer for we're mapping this foo onto a, b, c, d. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to replace the head, we'd like to replace foo here with some sort of different head. So if I actually try from before and replace bar, apply bar to answer, it'll just replace the head here, this list, of course, because the list here has a full form. as we saw before. This list has a full form list, so replacing this list with bar actually just gives us bar. So we replaced it at the zeroth level. So we don't want to do that, we want to replace at the level 1. So what we can do here is apply bar to answer at level 1. And of course, at level 0, it just replaced the head, the outer head here. But at level 1, it's replacing it at every single item along the list. And it's so common as well that it also has a short form. And so it's bar, it's triple at. We'll do this replacement at level 1. OK. So let's talk about iterators here a little bit. So let's take a look at a table, for instance, of I going from 1 to 10. And so this just gives us, you know, numbers. So we can now use apply, of course, to rip the head off. The head of this list output is list. So let's change. What's that, sorry? In the list of levels? Yeah, so this applies only at level 1. So we want it to be only at level 1. So there's a level spec here. And so once you get these things at different levels, if you actually take a look at here, apply function, you'll talk about level specs. And so in here, there'll be some details. So I've carefully timed my talk to go through reasonably fast because I've got quite a bit to actually get through to actually get you through to the end here. But if you want to take a look at levels and level specs. Calmly. What? I'm not calm? No, you can only have one head. Each expression only ever has one head. Everything singly, everything fits into, if that is your question, everything is of the form head, argument, argument, argument in Mathematica. And so you can only actually, you can get the head of an expression through getting the part 0. So if I've got this A comma B comma C comma D, something, and I'm actually, you know, as you see, I'm getting part 1 of that is A. If I get part 0 of that, it's actually the head is list. So if that's H right there, it will give me the zeroth part. And so you can map it this at the level spec if we're doing it here. If I've got, let's take a look at something a little bit more complicated. Let's look at this after, but this is general. So as this thing gets deeper and deeper, if I have A of T, G, Y, and D, and I actually want to apply bar at level 2, it will actually go through and it will replace all the A's at the various levels, and I can replace that at level 1. I think all the various heads will be at level 1 and level 2. It'll replace all of them at every level of 2 instead of just the ones at actually level 2 there. So that's quickly answers your question, but we'll get on to the details later of level spec. Okay, cool. So tables, let's take a look at this table here. I'll just say again here, this is an iterator. I is an iterator. It goes from 1 to 10 here. And so that's the common form of an iterator, the name, start, the end of the iterator. And so we can see that particular form. And of course, we can rip the head of list off and replace it by plus and actually sum those numbers and get 55. And just for comparison's sake here, we could take a look and we could sum the numbers between I equals 0 to 10, for instance, of I. And of course, that will give us the same answer. And of course, we can generalize. We're in Mathematica. And that gives us the closed form solution for the sum of I from I equals 1 to n. And interestingly, I quite like this. Frederick Gauss actually figured this out at age 5. And it's kind of a cool little tidbit of knowledge. I remember, I'm sure you're all very bright, you're string theorists and everything. You got this in first year university with some, you know, induction sorts of things. And I got it absolutely the first time I saw it, but I wasn't 5 and I didn't get it myself. So it's quite humbling to think of people doing these kinds of things. Anyway, and so of course the more generalized the algorithms of these things, this works on the Zielberg algorithm in Mathematica, and there's some guy, Pauli, I think, the generalized form of symbolic summation in some of the algorithms we've got. Anyway, so getting back, so that's a single iterator. We've got it for a table. What happens if we have multiple iterators? So we can take maybe square root of j and have some iterator I will go from 1 to 5, for instance, and j will go from 1 to 5 here. And here we get a table of the various terms. which is nested. And we have vector addition in Mathematica, of course, for lists. So a simple addition like that, 1 plus 2, 3 plus 4. The 1 and 3 will add, the 2 and the 4 will add. And of course, we get 4 comma 6. So we could turn around and we could apply plus to this particular list, and it'll do vector addition, and we'll see the various terms, and we could, you know, apply plus again to it, and we'll get the complete sum of all of the various elements in a table. So that's some applications, just showing some simple sort of applications of apply, some iterators, and so on. Many things in Mathematica have more than one way of doing it. We saw we could take ranges before, but we can also actually, using spans, but we could actually take sort of like the first three elements here, or take the last two elements here. And similarly with drop, we could get this particular output, you know, drop the first element, for instance, and or we could drop the last element here and work with that. Okay, so there's some structuring commands. Let's actually now talk about functions. We're now at the stage, we know how to input stuff, we know how to get the help system, we know about doing calculations, we know about the structure of expressions. We can actually define stuff now, we can do our own functions. So let's start off with something really simple, my square. I'm going to make a function that squares things, and so I know I use colon equals because I want it to evaluate later on, and great, I can type my square, complete that, of x, woohoo, we've got my square of x. It gives me x squared, so that's great. But what happens if I want my square of something else? My square of t, for instance, it doesn't do anything because t doesn't actually match x. T is not x. So what I want to say is I want this thing to sort of match anything. I'm just going to put a blank there, and that's a pattern. And so it's a pattern variable. If I call that thing x, this x underscore is going to match anything, and it's going to be called x, and that is enough for us to actually define my squared of t. So now t will match the x underscore here, will match this pattern variable blank. It's matching a blank there. And of course, this could be anything plus, you know, gamma over, you know, sine of x or whatever. And it'll work fully generally. Okay, so armed with that knowledge, now let's write something, a very simple function. Let's write maybe the factorial function. So factorial of n, it's really simple. It's just n times fac of n minus 1. It's the first thing about a factorial, and we know fac of 0 is equal to 1 itself. So we can enter those rules, and I can type in now fac of 5. And it gives me the answer 120. And of course, this is reduced. It uses the first rule, fac of 5. The 5 matches n. It'll be 5 times fac of 4. That fac of 4 will actually match again, and it'll become fac of, you know, 4 times fac of 3, and so on by recursion. And this is what we mean by an infinite evaluation model. It'll apply these rules as many times as it can until it gets to a fixed point, until it can't apply them anymore. So we're going to get there. So for one of the things, so Nikolai is being sneaky here. Let's try something, you know, we know it should be gamma or something. So we could try 1.5. And this function, of course, it barfs and it says, hey, we've hit this recursion limit. What's going on? And it's because, of course, 1.5 will be written as 1.5 times fac of 0.5. 0.5 will be fac of minus 0.5, which will be fac of minus 1.5, and so on. It's fallen off the end, and we get this recursion limit, which we can change if we want to, and it won't give us the correct answer as we want it. So we'd like to turn around and alter these rules here and actually make them more specific and not allow fractional amounts. We only want to allow integers for our simple implementation. So we go here, we'll paste that, and we'll get here, and we'll clear all fac here. And what we do is we change the head. So we say this pattern here matches anything, and we're going to call it n. This will match anything which is an integer. So everything has a head. So like if I asked for what's the head of, you know, foo of, you know, bar, that there it'll give me foo, you know, and it doesn't matter if that's, you know, foo plus bar plus t or whatever. So that's all fine. And I asked for what's the head of something like 2. The head of 2 is actually integer. And the head of 2.5 or 2.4 is actually real. The head of integer will be symbol, I'm pretty sure. I haven't actually tested. Integer should be symbol. Yes, it is indeed. So everything has a head. And so what we're doing here is we're matching just this n underscore, which is only an integer. And so armed with this now, we can try fac of 0.5, and it remains unevaluated. There's no rule that actually matches that because it doesn't match this first rule up the top. It doesn't match the stack of an integer because, of course, 0.5 is not an integer. It doesn't have head integer. It has head real. So that's great. So that actually works. But as Nikolai said, head of 2 should be symbol? No. Head of 2 should be integer. So interestingly, I'm not going to answer that question, but I'll say that sometimes at Wolfram we sit around and we argue about the nature of 0 for like an hour. Is it epsilons? Or we argue about the nature of head as an integer. Is it actually integer? Or is it meta questions? And it's kind of fun and interesting. But anyways, outside the scope of this particular introductory talk. So this thing here, this underscore integer, will only match things which have got head integer. And so if I use something like underscore list, that would only match things with head list. If I used underscore foo, that would only match things with head foo, and so on. So that does that. So as Nikolai said, I'll just move on to more complicated patterns here. So we have this fact of -3. Again, this doesn't work because -3 is an integer, so it matches the first rule, and again, we fall off the end. So how do we stop this? Would actually like to go here. I'll be tidy. I'll merge those cells together. I'd actually like to say that this is only going to be true. This rule will only match if n is greater than 0. And so I use this slash semicolon, and this tells the pattern matcher that apply this rule only if n is greater than 0. And now I... What's that? I erase. Oh, yeah, here we go. Thanks. Yes, so it also didn't match before, but again, we have those things actually now working, and fact of 5 is, of course, 5 factorial, doing as it should. And, we can fact of 50 something, same as fact of 50, works nicely. Okay, so we've got some sort of fact, and this is, a very simple sort of matching function, but it gives you some of the taste of what you can do with this pattern matching. We could take that pattern, we could put it on the left-hand side if we wanted, we could even put it inside the particular bracket here. Put it inside there. It's the same. It's equivalent, and it'll actually work. So that's one form of specifying your rules to be more specific and only match certain parts. Another thing is pattern tests. So let's take a look at some FUD. We're going to make this we're going to have some pattern match anything. We'll call it A, and this will only match if we say it's even. And so what does even Q do? Well, even Q is for even things it's true, and for non-even things, it's false. Okay, so if we match even Q, FUD of anything here, which is even, we'll make that like A squared, for instance, and we'll get the same sort of rule. We'll do it for something odd Q, we'll maybe negate it. And so now we can do, FUD of, 4, give us 16, FUD of, 9, will give us -9, and so on. And FUD of something like pi, again, will give us unevaluated because pi is neither even nor odd. Okay, so that introduces these Q functions, these Boolean functions, and so in Mathematica, typically, any function that tests to see something is true or false will actually end with a Q. Is it even Q, odd Q? Is it an atom? Is it a number? Are these things the same? Does this something match something else? Or something free of something else? And so one of the important things here for pattern matching as we talk about it is the match Q function. So match Q tells us, does some expression actually match some pattern? And so we see here, it actually does. So for this, in this particular one, we could see like, this matches, this thing underscore, the first underscore matches B, the power and the X can match 4, that can match Y, that can match Z. If I go here and I change this to something like 3, it still matches. If I change that to, foo, it still matches. But if I come here, for instance, and add another argument, T, it no longer matches because we're missing one of the particular arguments here, T, for instance, and now it'll match. Okay, so with match Q, it turns out that a lot of the rules you actually write, we match structurally, not semantically, we match structurally. So let's give an example of what we mean by this. So let's have some FUD. I've used FUD before. I'll just quit the kernel quickly here. And so we use FUD, and so I use FUD of, let's say, W over Q. Some particular things, and of course this gets rewritten to the W matches A, the Q matches B, and it gets rewritten. That's great. We can add various things in here plus omega something else, whatever, and it will match. But what happens if now we turn around and actually put a 1 in here and put a 2 in the denominator here? it doesn't match. It's like, wait, what a second. The 1 can match the A, the 2 can match the B. Surely this should be firing. Why is this not working? Why is this rule not firing? Well, it turns out, well, let's go in here and try match queue of this particular thing. We're thinking, you know, this is crazy. This is matching, so we'll get A underscore divided by B underscore. That should surely match. And it doesn't match. This pattern, this is not an instance of this pattern, and so you, why is this the case? And so what you do is you take a look at it, and as always, you take a look at its full form, and we match structurally on the full forms of things. You see the internal form of a half is actually a rational of you know, A comma B, or 1 comma 2 in this particular case. Whereas the full form of something like Q over W, as I take a look at that, is a full form, as I mentioned before, the W is power W minus 1, so you know this can't match that particular pattern here. This particular pattern times the power blah does not match this rational something here, so to actually make our rule work, would come in here, would go here, and would change the bits here. We'll talk about the advanced pattern stuff like that, the lecture 2. Something else like that, and now we can have FUD of 1 half will actually resolve as we do it. So in the end, the answer to this is that we're matching on structural things, not actually doing semantic matching. Of course, if I say Q over W, is that rational? Is that a rational number? Because normally rationals are, of course, these things are integers, and so if I said, you know, that's 2.3 over, you know, A, is it a rational number? If I say, you know, E. Rational E over, you know, 1. Is that a rational number? It's, you know, it's irrational. So, yeah. So, rational of A comma B, it'll remain unevaluated. Okay, so let's move on just quickly to talk about rules. This is the parallel to actually the assignments. We can have some rule here. We've got some expression with x's in it, and we can do some substitution. You know, put the alpha if we wanted something else like get the right keyboard. It's hard to type standing up. So we can make some particular substitutions. But just like the case where we had the rule versus rule set versus set delayed, we've got the same question here about rule versus rule delayed. And so here I've applied this rule, but it's evaluated the right-hand side each time. So it's gone in here, it's substituted for each of the particular x's there, it's substituted a value, but if I have now just the actual rule itself, I'll get the same value each and every time. So rules, of course, can take not just just constants like this, they can take patterns. So let's just illustrate this again. Let's go back and do our factorial example from before. So here's the rules for factorial. This is a factorial rule. If we see fac of 0, we're going to rewrite it to 1, and if we see fac of n underscore, we're going to write that to n of fac of n minus 1. Great. So let's go and actually apply this rule now, and let's apply it once. So we apply this rule once, and we see by applying that rule once, it matches this thing, the fac of n will get rewritten one time. So we can get that, and so we can apply it there. We can apply it a second time. And applying a second time, we'll make another reduction. It's reduced it once, it'll be applied again, it'll reduce it again, and so on. So on, and so on, and so on. And finally, we can actually get down to the answer we want. And so instead of writing this out, applying it once each time, we can actually apply it multiple times by having a slash slash dot, which means apply this rule as many times as it can until we reach a fixed point. Again, our infinite evaluation model. Yep. Would it work without this, sorry? Yes, in fact, this particular example would actually work. Let's actually take a look. This one here, this fac of n minus 1, will not be an integer, maybe. So let's actually take a look. In general, some of the times, certainly this fac of 0 rule will actually work, and fac of 5, yeah, appears to work. So sometimes it can get a bit tricky here with this thing if it actually decides to evaluate that and then it feeds back in, but of course fac, right now, has no values. So in terms of the assignments, it might not work, but in terms of the rules, yes, it would actually work. Yep. This thing is not the Fibonacci's. So we'll talk about memoization and other things later on. So There are sometimes iteration limits, and you can redefine them, and recursion limits as well. So probably 10. I should probably cover it so they can do the exercises. So 7 minutes? Okay, so a little bit. So we'll cover some of these things later on, but it's important to actually get to not to go too fast. So here we have our my squared functions. We need to talk about pure functions here. We can apply the squared function, of course, to this particular list. And so we can do that. We could define my squared, my cubed, my triple, something else. But in all the modern languages, and including mathematics since the beginning, we have the notion of a pure function. And so that we can actually write for the squared function is just this. And so this notation that says this is the first argument that we're doing, we're naming it this hash, and we use this ampersand to say that it's a pure function. And so that applied to like 3, it's just a normal function here, applied to 4. We can even use the same infix notation for our application as before. So this is the first argument. If we've got more than one argument, say we've got a second argument here, put argument 2, we could minus that, for instance, and then put in 2 arguments here, a comma b. And so it's a pure function. So what we can do now is we can use these pure functions to just map onto various things here, put some brackets here. It's a pure function. And that will just turn around and square them. Maybe we wanted a cube there, and so on. This x is a pure function. One of the other nice forms of a pure function is actually, if you look in the palettes here, the special characters, one of the symbols here is this function here. So we could turn around and actually just use escape, fn escape. So this is a bit more sort of readable, human readable. That thing there, will act as a normal pure function. And of course, that variable, we can scope it and change it to be whatever we want. Okay, so let's use this to actually do some sorting here. We've got this sort of expression, some various things. We'd like to sort this list of things on its second argument. So given that list, we could actually use sort by percent. And we're going to sort that by we actually want to get the second argument out of here. So you know that's part. So that thing here will actually just pick out the last of the elements here. So if I get the list here, I'll say call that L. And so I map that onto L. We can see we've picked out the second parts, 4, 2, 1, 3, 4, 2, 1, 3. So this particular function here will just pick out those parts. And so now with that pure function, I can just turn around and sort this list by that particular element. And similarly, I could turn around and instead of sort by, I could give it an actual sorting. I could compare the various things. I could compare, this is sort, this gives me true or false. Are the items in order or out of order? And so I could sort of say here, these particular things, is the first element less than the second? That's the proper order. And again, we see we've sorted it here. The second element smaller than that second element, which is smaller than that one. And if I wanted to change the sort order, I could change that to being greater, for instance. And that would give me the first one here, 4, 3, 2. So it's quite useful to use these pure functions in various places instead of actually naming them. I could name it my sort function or my stability or my ordering or something else like that. OK, so some of the other commands that'll be useful for you is enter. Enter is like a generalized dot product. Here we have the A will be matched with the W, the B with the X, the Y with the Z here. And so this is like a generalized dot product. And this is the head of the various things of the inner operation there. Instead of times, we could make it H. And you could sort of see this H is now paired the A and the W, the B and the X, the C and the Y, the D and the Z. Or I could actually turn around and change the outer argument here, change that to a G, for instance, there. And you can sort of see we've got the G is ahead. And now we can apply bits, map to them, do various things. Outer is, again, gives the generalized outer product, every single pairing between the first list and the second list. Other things that are useful probably is cases. Let's say we want to pick out from a list or some expression, we want to pick out something that matches a pattern. Let's say we want to pick out the even powers here. We can take a look at that matches anything to any power. And we put this even Q now here. And then we've picked out the even power. Yeah, there we go. So that also illustrates something. That's syntax coloring. We can see case has no actual value defined for it because it's blue there. And so if it's a system symbol, we actually see it goes black. And it's the same with some of our own particular values. Like my foo, it's blue until I give it a value, and then it's black. Okay. So the cases here, and we see those are the even cases. We could change that simply to the odd cases here, odd q, and would give us the odd powers. Select likewise actually turns around and will give us, it'll pick out elements of a list that match something that's true. So we could take a look at the last of the various things of the bits, and we want the ones, the last of those particular elements to be even. So last will pick out the, because of course, if we map last onto all these things, because all these things are powers, of course, so last on those things will just give us the power, because of course the full form of that is power x comma 2, power x comma 3, so on. I could put an h of, 3 comma 4 here, whatever, and it will give me the various last elements, and so this will pick out things from the list where the last element is actually even. And so we could change that to, of course, odd q to give the various things that are odd powers. Similarly, you actually want to know about length here. Length of some list, of course, just gives you the length of the list, which is 4. It doesn't have to be, of course, a list. It can be just sort of any expression here, and so on. So those are some of the structuring commands. I'll just comment now on the multi-argument patterns. And so really, a couple minutes just to wind up here. So we have a single underscore matches one particular argument. If we have two underscores, it can match one or more arguments. And if we have three underscores, it can match zero or more arguments. So here we have this function. We say this is going to match something. The first element can match anything. We're going to call it A. And the last element has to be named the same thing. And there can be some elements in the middle. So for instance, f of like r comma d of t of r, that will match, because this thing here will match this triple underscore in the middle, and of course it will now get mapped to this g of r comma b. We could match it with zero elements here, and that will also match. It could be w if we want, but of course r, something else there, something else like that, although the triple underscore will match the stuff in the middle, it won't match the stuff at the end. I'll call it t, for instance, and so it will remain unevaluated. Okay, so given that, let's do a simple example here. Let's implement bubble sort with using this new knowledge. Bubble sort's it's a bad algorithm for sorting, but it's quite simple to implement. And basically, we've got a list of things. If we've got two elements out of order, we flip them into order if they're unordered correctly. So let's say we've got some stuff on the left. It could be match any sort of elements, even no elements. Got two elements A and B, and so we've got some stuff on the right, and that's going to be equal to bub of the L, B, A, R. So in other words, this is exactly the same. We've just flipped the A and the B have flipped order, and we want that to be true only when B is less than A. So we put our pattern here, B is less than A here, and we've implemented bubble sort. So I can get some elements here. And it has sorted them now into canonical order. And in fact, we probably in the end want to put in some rule, so we don't want the head to be bub. In the end, we want it to be some bub of any sort of arguments. It'll be just basically a list of the arguments, for instance. And now we have implemented bubble sort. So pretty simple stuff. OK, I'll finally comment, and I'll say that the full forms of, you say, everything's an expression. You've got these patterns. And so you question, are these patterns, are these sort of Mathematica things, or are they meta things? It actually turns out, no. Each of these patterns actually has a full form, again, in Mathematica. And so in the end, you can write things that match patterns that match patterns. And so you can write transpilers, is the new lexicon in computer science, as we call them, and have the meta languages and do computations on them. So in summary then, everything in Mathematica is an expression. It's got a head, it's got arguments. Mathematica applies rules in an order of the most specific to the most general. It uses an infinite evaluation model. It'll keep doing computations until it reaches a fixed point. To match any one particular pattern will be variable underscore. To match something with a particular head, you put a variable underscore with a head there. One or more things, two underscores, zero or more things, three underscores. And then we've got some short forms for like replace, which is slash dot, map, slash at, apply, at. We've got pattern conditions and pattern tests. There's this distinction between equals and colon equals, and also the distinction between equality as well. We won't talk about Wolfram Alpha just yet. We'll do that in the next session. And we've got pure functions. So I think that brings me to a close. I think that's as much as you'll actually need to actually complete at least my exercises for the afternoon. We'll be here to help you progress through the summer school.